The government can't bargain on drug prices for Medicare. That changes this afternoon. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. This afternoon, President Biden is set to sign the $750 billion climate change, prescription drug cost, and corporate minimum tax package into law. This sets the stage for what will be the biggest financial commitment from the federal government to fight climate change. We continue to look at this from different angles. Today, it's provisions that for the first time allow Medicare to negotiate the cost of prescription drugs. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Starting in 2026, Medicare will benefit from negotiated prices on an initial set of 10 drugs. These are to be among the most common prescriptions given to seniors, but also ones that have only brand name options, no generics. The bargaining power from Medicare's heft is expected to save the federal government $100 billion. Savings for individuals could come sooner. Starting next year, the price of insulin will be capped at $35 a month, and Medicare will be able to impose a rebate on drugs that go up in price at a rate faster than inflation. Depending on which drugs end up affected, the downward pressure on prices could also save money for people with private health insurance. And starting in 2025, annual Medicare out-of-pocket prescription drug costs will be capped at $2,000. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Britain has become the first country to approve a new anti-COVID vaccine from Moderna that also targets an Omicron variant. This as U.S. authorities focus on vaccines that target two more recent strains of the virus. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has that.
The differing approaches in the UK and the US highlight the lack of global coordination to get the coronavirus pandemic under control. That's according to Prashant Yadav, senior fellow at the Center for Global Development.
We are at a point where we need a clearer way of determining what will be the types of boosters that we need in the future.
The UK is pursuing a vaccine strategy that targets the BA1 strain of Omicron, while the US is looking to a vaccine against BA4 and BA5, Omicron strains that emerged more recently. Yadav says that patchwork could complicate the production strategy for Moderna and other vaccine suppliers.
It's fragmenting their total supply into versions that they have to manufacture and distribute dependent on which country it is going to.
And he says that's inefficient.
We want the system to be working at its maximum throughput so that we can get the boosters to many people quickly in the fall.
Scientists disagree about what makes the most sense. Dr. Monica Gandhi, an infectious disease doctor at UCSF, says populations are better off waiting for a version of the vaccine that's closest to the dominant strain at a given time.
The antibodies that we raise by getting these vaccines are really specifically targeted towards that subvariant.
Although she says even older versions offer some protection against severe disease. That's why Dr. Vin Gupta, a pulmonary critical care physician at the University of Washington School of Medicine, advocates moving forward with what's available.
In my view, there is no need to wait for a BA4, BA5 specific booster, because you risk delaying the rollout.
And delaying the next phase of vaccines here in the U.S. is a risk, he says, that isn't worth it. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Checking markets, crude oil is lower, down another 1% now, under $88.50 a barrel. Stocks, Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down in the 0.2% range. This week marks a year of Taliban rule in Afghanistan, where half the population is suffering from acute hunger, inflation's at 15%, and girls are not allowed to attend school. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, spoke with the country's former central bank chief, Ajmal Ahmadi, who fled Afghanistan a year ago. Victoria joins us now from London. Hey there.
Good morning, David.
It's currently a focus on some $9 billion in Afghan central bank assets frozen by the U.S. and other governments since the Taliban takeover. Talks to release those funds are reportedly going nowhere. What does Mr. Ahmadi make of that?
Well, a lot of people had hoped that those funds would go toward things like addressing the worsening humanitarian and economic crisis in the country. The thing is, usually those kinds of funds are not used in that way. They're sort of like a monetary policy tool for the central bank to do things like pay for imports or defend the economy from any shocks it might experience. But using them for humanitarian aid had been a discussion point for negotiators in this case. Mr. Ahmadi said, though, the bigger issue here is that even if those reserves are going to be released, it won't be enough to solve Afghanistan's economic problems.
On an annual basis, Afghanistan ran a $7 billion trade deficit. And so having just 1 year of reserves, even if it were to be released, would really only help Afghanistan for 1 year. So the broader question is, how is the international community going to continue to support Afghanistan?
All right. So he poses that question, Victoria. Does he have a roadmap for the answer?
Kind of. He said it really needs to be through a combination of reserves releases like the ones we just talked about and additional budgetary support like the international community had been providing the previous government. The fear when the Taliban took over last year was that all international support would just go to zero. And it has been about $2 billion that's gone toward the country, according to the World Bank, over the last year. But to get more help, Mr. Ahmadi said the Taliban really needs to implement a series of reforms like allowing girls to go back to school, which they haven't been able to do since March of this year. And so far, the Taliban hasn't really been interested in making any of those changes. So Mr. Ahmadi says until it does, the economy and the people living in it will continue to suffer the effects.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig in London, thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm David Brancaccio in New York. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.